Assignment 6, a public interest series of KREZ-TV, is pleased to present San Juan Heritage, a realistic look at the history of the great San Juan Basin and its people. Your hosts for this series are Dr. Robert Delaney and Mr. Arthur Wyatt. Tonight's program is entitled A Pioneer Hardware Man and Builder. Tonight's guests are Jackson Clark and Dwayne Smith. Now let's join Mr. Wyatt and his guests.
Jackson, welcome you on our program tonight. We're awfully happy to have you. And Dwayne, it's good. Over in Germany, whom we expect back next week. And thank you for being present tonight.
Well, thanks for having me.
Jackson, since our program is about your grandfather, Harry Jackson, can you give us a little background on him, where he was born and how he learned the blacksmith trade and the like? Happened to come west?
Well, I'd be delighted to. Art, Harry Jackson, my grandfather, was born in Camden, New Jersey, of a German immigrant family in 1859. And as he grew up in that eastern country and his father had a farm, he found that the home life was quite oppressive, and so he pulled up stakes and apparently kissed his mother goodbye and went to Frederick, Maryland to seek his fortune. And as he related, he got kicked out of college and decided he'd learn a trade, and tied up, became an apprentice blacksmith with a firm by the name of Seeger. And as he related to me, and then a little story that my aunt Ella Berkheimer wrote about him, he worked for a period of 3 years for Mr. Seeger as an apprentice at $50 a year, and at the end of 3 years, by careful management, he managed to save $100, and that wasn't bad.
Well, that's going some, isn't it? After he served his apprenticeship and was qualified as a blacksmith, did he open up shop or work for someone back there?
Well, as I recall, he worked for a period around the East Coast, but he felt that Maryland, as nice as it was, had no allure for him, and he decided he'd head on west. I had an interesting thing when we were having our preliminary conversation, but back in 1939, we went back to the World's Fair, and I was about 14 years old, and we went to Frederick, Maryland, and we went down to this old Seeger's blacksmith shop, and it was still in operation, and one of the fellows who was grew up and roomed with my grandfather at that time was still running the blacksmith shop, and my grandfather walked in and said, do you need any good help? And he said, well, he weren't hiring old men, you know, and then he introduced himself, and that's the first time that they had met in over 70 years.
Well, I'll be fair. Well, when he came west, where did he land to begin with, and did he follow the blacksmith trade?
Yes, he landed in Colorado Springs and worked in Colorado Springs for a period, but the lure of the what they called the sunny San Juan, the Denver and Rio Grande Western, was building their railroad into the San Juan, was heavily advertising the opportunities available in the Durango and area of the San Juan Basin, and so he decided he would follow the railroad at that time. Seems sort of ironic that next week they'll start tearing them up.
Yes, that's right. Well, how did he come over to the Basin? Did he just come over here and open up a shop, or what?
Well, he hired on with the railroad, and as I recall, he took one of the first trains from Alamosa across Cumbers Pass, Toltec Gorge to one of the railroad work camps called Amargo. And at this time, Amargo was sort of a rough and tough railroad construction town, and I think they had a number of saloons and a number of dancing girls and bars, and he said the shootings and killings were pretty rough. And then they moved on down as the line progressed through Chama. He set up another camp, another blacksmith shop for the railroad at the junction of the Pine, junction of the San Juan and the, what is it?
Piedra,
at Arbeliz. That's right, at the old town of Arbeliz.
Now, did they move these towns like you did the railroad towns elsewhere in the West? So they had what we, as soon as they got to the end of the track, they build a town, then move another one, and then they went a little further,
well,
move down the track?
Dwayne, Durango was the goal. Anima City had been the town. through some difficulties with the Rio Grande Railroad, Denver and Rio Grande, the new town of Durango had been established, and Durango was the goal. So these were merely construction camps.
Temporary
construction camps.
Tent cities. Hmm. That's right.
Fell on wheels idea, which they used on the Union Pacific.
Yeah.
That's right.
Temporary towns.
At the same time that he was coming across, working on the railroad, my grandmother's family, who was a George Becker family, had come over on one of the first passenger trains from Antonita to Chama, and then had taken the wagon train from there to Durango, and had spent the winter in Durango and established a hotel, so to cater to their future patrons of the railroad.
This inn was in 1880.
About 1881.
So they both families then came about the same time.
About the same time, that's right.
Here, mm-hmm. Grandmother, maybe a few months earlier.
That's right. I remember my grandmother told me that that they got the word through the railroad telegraph that President Garfield had been assassinated. And no, they didn't get it by the railroad telegraph. It came by messenger because there was no telegraph. And the rails had reached a point on Cumbers Pass near Toltec Gorge, you know where it is, Art.
And they got the Garfield Monument.
The Garfield Monument that signifies that this was a point where the rails had reached at the time of President Garfield's assassination.
Is that still there? I see old pictures of that.
Yes, it's still there.
Garfield Monument.
Well, did he continue to work for the railroad after he came to Durango, or did he set up a shop on his own?
Well, he went into partnership with another gentleman, and the man that he had come from Colorado Springs with worked on the railroad, decided he'd go back and establish shop in Pueblo. So my granddad established a little shop in Durango near where used to be the Ball Foundry when I was a kid, and then it was a Rio Grande Motorway garage, and now it's Earl Barker's parking lot for the Strader Hotel, and right behind the Colorado Alpine Sports. It's a vacant lot. And he had a shop there for a period of time. And apparently, sensing that there were three or four hardware stores in town, and in addition to the need for a good blacksmith to service the mining trade and the rather growing economy, decided to start handling a few shovels and some dynamite and some supplies to cater to the farmers and the miners. And then he moved across the street where the present French hardware is now. Can I show this photograph? This picture was apparently taken, it's not dated, but about 1885, and shows the one of the present buildings that encompass the French hardware building complex, 742 Main. This was the original building for Jackson Hardware, and it shows a sleigh that was manufactured by the company, but it's rather a priceless old picture. It's the first one we have taken at that location.
The first building on Main Street there.
One in that block, yes,
in that
block.
That's
right.
Mm-hmm. Well, he set up a blacksmith shop there.
That's right.
And then from that, he went into what? The manufacturing wagons, so I've been told. Is that right?
That's right, Art. This was primarily a horseshoeing and a novelty shop manufacturing carriages and wagons and farm implements and general blacksmithing, because mm-hmm. there was a great need for it at that time. You know,
sure.
Nobody had ever heard of an arc welder, had they?
No. Okay. Where did they manufacture the equipment? Did they build it right there too, at the same place?
Yes, that's right. They did. They built it right in that building. And then along about the same time, as I mentioned, he decided he'd branch into the hardware business and started handling the supplies along with it. I have another photograph here that's taken a number of years later, and if we can keep the glare off of this, it shows the
additional building, doesn't it?
The additional building. This is the original building, and then the additional building, which was the blacksmith shop in the basement portion, and then the carriage shop in the top where the wagons were manufactured, and then sort of a utility house for horseshoeing and things like that out in this direction. Now, this picture was taken at the time before the streets were hard surfaced at all, and it unable to detect it in the photo, but the streetcar tracks showed. I think it was about this time, and maybe a little bit later, that they had a fire in the upstairs, and my grandfather threw my mother out the window and rolled her down the awning, and somebody caught her in their arms as she rolled down the awning to escape the fire from that, because they lived over the store.
And was the children, their children, your mother, young at that time?
Yes, that's right, just a baby.
Just a baby?
Just a baby, that's right. Just a baby.
Well,
less than a year old.
Of course, when they got into the hardware business, he's getting into a lot of competition, but he seemed to make it.
Yeah.
The hardware business. And I guess, though, the mining was one of the principal things that he handled hardware for at the early beginning, wasn't it?
Well, that's right. Dwayne and I were talking. The mining industry was a burgeoning industry in the San Juan. In fact, the rails were driven in, not to, so they could ship agricultural products out, but so that they could ship the riches of the mineralized belts of the mining districts to the north. The railroads were being built to the north, and this was a center of great commerce for the mining industry.
Well, how did he happen to turn down Tom Walsh from the Camp Bird Mine? It's a chance for your family fortune right there when he asked you for that grubstake.
Well, this is sort of a legend that he used to grubstake these different people. Would come in and say, Harry, I need a grubstake for a sure thing up in the Needle Mountains or in the La Plata Mountains or near Silverton or something. And most of those ventures never proved out.
Did any of them prove out for him?
I can't remember one. I really can't. There was some activity in the neglected mine for a long time, and he was an original stockholder in the neglected mine. And Mr. Neil Camp, who died here last year, one of the grand old men of Durango, at the time that we sold our interest in the neglected mine, I think about 1946, Dwayne, he told my mother, he said, my father told me that he would buy me a buggy with a pony when we sold a neglected mine. And, he said, I'm a little too old for it now. But he did, he refused a grubstake for old man Walsh, and subsequently he supposedly discovered the Camp Bird Mine.
Camp Bird Mine.
But you can't win them all.
Well, he really didn't discover it. Wasn't somebody that he can't grubstake. Eventually discovered it.
Discovered it. I think that's right.
That's right. Well, I've heard stories of the going back to those early days about how old places like the hardware store would get exclusive distribution on certain items, and they usually turned out to be pretty lucrative. And Didn't your grandfather have the DuPont powder contract for this area?
That's right. The store of Jackson Hardware, or Jackson Hardware and Implement Company, had the DuPont contract for the entire portion of southwestern Colorado and northern New Mexico for a good many years, and supplied the mining industry and the coal mining industry in New Mexico and the coal mining industry around Hespers and Porter and Carbon Junction at the same time.
Sure. Well, I remember here a good many years ago running onto some old powder houses here in the early days. There was one out here, right up Lightner Creek a little ways, and then back up the draw. And then there was one over here, back of, not really back of, but up that canyon at the side of Crestview.
That's right, right up in top of Crestview.
Well, the old pest house was up there too, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It was. That's
it,
right.
And the powder house both.
Uh-huh. Well, those were must have been interesting days back in when this country was really forming, Art. You know it?
Absolutely.
It must have been fantastic.
Well, of course, he was in just the right business for his time. Mining had to have blacksmithing. Nobody knew about an arc welder in those days, and the powder business was, of course, the drilling was started out being hand done, and then later going to power equipment, but they had to have powder, and they went through the period of black powder into dynamite, right in about that era too, didn't they?
That's right. That's right.
Well, those times were not only historic, but they were fabulous times because it was a developing new country. Then, how did they phase out the manufacturing business, making wagons and things like that? Did he just quit it or sell it out? Or
well, it more or less just went the way. I think he could see that the automobile was going to take over this business, you know, and wagon manufacturing. At one time, though, interestingly enough, he was the first manufacturer west of the Mississippi to put an iron or a steel axle in a wagon. And there were several of those around. In fact, Malin White bought one that I had and has it in his yard. It's in a steel axle wagon. But as he said in his sort of biography, autobiography, that it was a killer, you know. And he went back to discontinued the steel axle wagon.
Went back to the wooden skeins.
That's right. Chet Meyer down in Fruitland, New Mexico, used to buy wheels and axles, spokes, things like this from the store. And he told me as late as 15 years ago that out in the Navajo Reservation, you'd still see one of these steel axle wagons.
Is that right? Well, you know, during World War II, it's interesting, the mixer box over at the uranium plant across where the old smelter was, first they put in were iron and the acid in the solution eat them out faster than you could put them in. So they switched over to wood and used a wooden box and with a wooden shaft. And I came over to the Jackson Hardware and got all of the wagon spokes and buggy spokes that you had left over there in the store to use for in that mixing box on those. We drill a hole in that shaft and drive those hickory spokes in there, and they'd last for several weeks, sometimes 3-4 months. For an ordinary iron outfit, it only last a week, 10 days. And we cleaned them up, and when we closed down the plant, there was less than a half a bundle of the old buggy spokes and wagon spokes left.
Well, now, did he have a store in more than one town, or did he just have one hardware store in Durango? Did he branch out?
Well, we had a store. He had a store in Silverton for a period, but it apparently was not successful, and there's very little known about it. No pictures or anything like that. So very little known about it. But primarily here in Durango, he believed that Durango was the capital of the San Juan Basin. It was going to be the trade center, and this is where it was. And after he handled he had one of the first automobiles. I think the first automobile in Durango, and then later became a dealer for a number of automobiles. Well, he had an old Winton.
Old Winton,
yeah. And a succession of Wintons. And my mother tells me that they had more power in reverse than they did in any of the lower forward gears, and that she went with him on the first trip to take the first automobile and that drove into the town of Rico, and they had to back up a lot of hills. You know,
gravity fed the gas tank.
Probably so.
Now, did he also sell these?
Or
did
he sell some automobiles? Yes, that's right. Had a dealership.
What
Winton dealership?
Winton dealership. Uh-huh.
And then we have a photo here showing a line of trucks, and I'm not sure what make of truck it is.
And that owned the original International?
Might have been an International.
I think it is.
So it evolved from a blacksmith shop to a carriage maker to a sort of an automobile dealer, but primarily it was always a hardware store, and it was and is now after we sold it to Jim French and his family in 57.
Well, he certainly was willing to change with the times. Some old timers wouldn't.
He grew with the community into whatever they needed. He turned to it, didn't he?
That's right.
Well, did he sell the store out before he passed away when he retired?
No, he retired in 1919 and sold his interest in the store, his total 100% interest to my mother and my father, Mr. and Mrs. Fred Clark, and to Mr. and Mrs. W.L. Berkheimer, my aunt and uncle. And they remained as partners until about 1941 or 42, when Berkheimer's retired and moved to California. My grandmother died in 1938, and my grandfather died in 1944. And from 1944 until I came home from the service in 46, my mother and father operated the store, and my father passed away right after I got home, and then I was active in the hardware store, and from 46 until 1957, together with Barney Schoser, who is now with Farmer Supply, and Joe Schobert, we had Jackson Hardware Incorporated, and then we sold that to Jim French in 1957.
Mm-hmm. Is there any of the old families left around here, the men that worked for your grandfather?
Well, you know, the Hollopeter family, Joe Hollopeter was one of the original blacksmiths, and there are several people. Thea Gigline died here just this last year.
Yeah.
He came in and worked for my grandfather, and his son is our sales manager for our present company, Pepsi-Cola in Farmington. And so we've got sort of a two-generation affiliation with young Bobby, and he's a top-notch guy. He's not as strong or as I don't think he drinks as much whiskey as his dad did, but he's a 100% honest guy.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of times these families get established with a family like that, and they work right on through, and it's surprising how those connections will hang together for many years, and sometimes in this two or three generations.
You know, an interesting thing, Art and Duane, about my grandmother's side of the family, they'd come in as German immigrants into the Central City, Virginia City area, and he ran a wagon train, had one leg, not a wagon train, but a wagon. He was a wagon peddler, and he had one leg, and he'd travel around to these mining camps and sell needles and threads and pots and pans and everything. And when he came to the San Juan, well, he founded this little hotel called the National Hotel, which is about the present place of the Grand Palace. And this is where my grandfather roomed and met my grandmother and eloped. And there was one old-timer here who was staying at the hotel that night. He died here about 10 years ago, and he said, old George Becker said, he stole my daughter like a thief in the night.
Like a thief in the night. Your grandfather boarded there, did he?
Yes.
Well, so he had kind of the inside track.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the history of a family that has gone through the complete development of an area is really fascinating. The store, as I remembered it, changed with the times and was very modern, one of the most modern hardware stores you'd find any place in the country. At the time you sold it, it was still just as up-to-date as it possibly could be. As I recall, you won some national awards on it, didn't you?
Well, we were named Brand Name Retailer of the Year for the Brand Names Foundation in 1953. Which was a national honor.
So well,
it was quite an honor for a little store in a little town.
Little store in a little town. Well, it was a big store in a little town, I would say that. Though, who was your main suppliers in those days? Were they Colorado outfits, or did you have to go out of the state? I know back in the early days, your grandfather had to go clear back east, didn't he, for his wholesale.
Most of it came from St. Louis, but you know, Colorado, most of the supplies, I think, now come out of Denver, and Albuquerque and Grand Junction's quite a supply center, and it's about the same as when we were in the thing.
When you were in. Mm-hmm. Back in those days, of course, you had to go back east for the main
right.
supplies. Back, Shapley, as I remember, was one of the old,
mm-hmm.
Old established hardware stores that supplied the West. I remember seeing stuff from there when I was a kid. All right. Well, have you any comments you'd like to make about the family on your own?
Well, I you know, one thing I'd like to say is that we've at this date, consider how many years the family has been in this area, that southwestern Colorado has been very good to us. But even if it hadn't been, it's the greatest place in the world to live. And I believe in southwestern Colorado. I think we're within a place where we're going to have maybe too many people soon. And
hate to see that.
Well, yeah, you do, but you hate to hold progress
oh,
back.
Oh, you can't.
But, we firmly believe, and I'm glad that I had the opportunity to grow up here. I'm glad that I have the opportunity to raise my children. I'm glad that I have the opportunity to be associated here in Durango and in the San Juan Basin and at this particular time in history. I think it's the greatest place in the entire world.
Well, you know, I'm here by choice myself, and I can agree with you. You know, it's really interesting to go back, though, and check back the history of some of the old families in the areas, and to get to find out, to know something about some of the hardships that they went through. And they didn't look on them as hardships, so we call them hardships now, but at the time, why, they were so busy making a living that there wasn't any question about it to them as to how tough the times were.
No.
And it's been a very interesting thing. Well, thank you, Jackson, and thank you, Duane, for
thank
being
you, Mr.
on Warren. Our program tonight with San Juan Heritage Children here.
Assignment 6 has brought you San Juan Heritage, produced by this station in cooperation with the Center of Southwest Studies at Fort Lewis College in Durango. Your hosts for this series, Dr. Robert Delaney and Mr. Arthur Wyatt, Dr. Delaney, the head of the Center of Southwest Studies at Fort Lewis College, and Mr. Wyatt, former Colorado State Representative and longtime resident of the Basin. Mr. Wyatt's guests for tonight's program have been Jackson Clark and Duane Smith. Be watching on the second Tuesday of June at the same time for the next in this series. San Juan Heritage is directed by Dan Wilson, engineered by Doc Strasser, camera by Gary West, and this is Dan Wilson speaking and thanking you for joining us on San Juan Heritage.
Union.